Intervju Radija Študent.
Lepo pozdravljeni poslušalci Radija Študent. Danes je z nami na intervjuju Mihael Dudok Devit, avtor tudi pravkar v kinodvoru predvajanega filma Rdeča želva. Mihael, very nice to have you with us. I heard that you very much like to come to these small countries.
Yes.
So you're actually on sort of a promotion tour. We already saw your film on Leaf Festival, on Animateca Festival. Now you're in, you actually came according to invitation by Kinotrip, right?
Yes. Yes, I just recognized you saying the word želva. It's the only Slovenian word I know. Yes, I've been invited to be here with the premiere of the film, and it's obviously a wonderful experience to meet the audience, to answer questions to the audience. And here I've been struck by the passion for the film industry with all the people I've talked with. People are educated about films, they're passionate about films.
Well, you must have quite a passion of your own since you were working on the Red Tortoise or Red Turtle for 9 years.
Yes.
So
it's 9 years is a long time to make a film. It's not unusual in animation. Many other films have taken a long time too. But in my case, it took so long because it took a long time. It took me 5 years to write the story. And when I say write story, I don't mean just writing a text on a word processor. It's actually telling the story in a comic strip version. We call it storyboard, where you tell the whole story in drawings, pencil on paper, in thousands and thousands of drawings. But you almost make a kind of simplified version of the film. You scan the drawings and you put them in a timeline. And when you see the complete thing, you see the blueprint of the film. And there you know if the rhythm of the film works, if the story is told clearly, if it feels good. And that took a long time because it was difficult to write, and also because it's simply a lot of work to do all the drawings.
You also did quite some of the work by yourself, right?
A lot of that I did alone. Normally you would be two or three or four people working on the storyboard, and I had help, but sometimes help, even if they were good, didn't work for me because I needed to explore things, try things out, think about things. And when someone was asking me, so what shall I do next, I wasn't usually ready to ask them to do a very specific thing. So I prefer to work alone. It's a relatively cheap phase of the film. It doesn't cost the producers very much to keep me alive. It's important to get that right, because if you really feel that it really works, then you start working with a big team to do the animation. And then it's very expensive, extremely expensive, to change your mind and to make a new scene, or to take one out and replace it by another. So if the storyboard, the cheap version, is solid, then you are much more efficient when you actually make the film.
Was the money also considered by Studio Ghibli, since a lot of people say that they are in sort of financial difficulties at the moment? They probably, when they called you, they give you totally open hands with doing it.
They give me, I don't know if you say it in English, carte blanche. It means they gave me total freedom. I asked them, do you want me to make the film in Japanese style? They said, no, you propose the style. They made it clear that the film was not going to be made in Japan. They did not have a story for me. They said, you propose a story. So on all those levels, they were very open to anything I proposed. And when I started writing the story and making the storyboard, they had opinions, they had suggestions, but they were very discreet with them. They would say, well, this is our opinion. We think this works better than that, for instance. But it's our opinion. You are the director. You decide. That's how they work with their own films. And for me, I mean, that's ideal. And me, in turn, I asked them a lot of questions. I didn't just go somewhere and make the film. I was all the time asking for feedback from the producers, but also from my colleagues, from the artists who worked on the film.
Some people say you also got some help by this Japanese author that gave you a book of transformations from animals.
Yes,
to...
I see. Yes, you have done your research. So Studio Ghibli said in the very beginning, they said, we have a book for you here. They give me a book. They say, have a look at this. It's called Kwaidan. And it's written by a European, Lafcadio Hearn. I say European because I think he's partly Greek, partly Irish. I'm not sure. But anyway, he's a European who lived in the 19th century in Japan, who became Japanese. He married a Japanese woman. And he collected fairy tales, Japanese fairy tales. He calls them ghost stories because they tend to be a bit dark. And Studio Ghibli gave me the book called Kwaidan, and they said, read this because it may inspire you, and it did. I did not take any of the stories literally, but it was about men and nature, men and women and nature and transformations, and very strong emotions. And I thought, yeah, they are very powerful. So they excited me when I was writing my story.
So how did the story look like before you? You had like Robinson Crusoe in mind? Or?
Yeah, I had Robinson Crusoe in mind, but also as an example of what I did not want. I suppose we all know the story. I knew the story since childhood because I saw it in a TV series, a French TV series on television, an old TV series, black and white. Loved it so much. I thought, it's such a beautiful story. What do you do when you are alone in nature? And how do you score? And on top of that, it was very exotic, very romantic to see the topics. I read the book, and actually it's very much of its time. It says about how to control nature and how to control local people and to introduce religion and culture. And that is, we've moved on. We are not like that anymore. We've learned from that. It was appropriate at that time. I was much more interested to see how much at home we are in nature, and to which degree we belong to nature. I wanted to explore that in the film. And I wanted to basically also, I wanted to say, who are you really when you are alone? Doesn't matter where, but really alone, because our identity comes very much from the people we meet. Even if we are someone who tends to be very lonesome or very separate, we still all the time need feedback from society. I also wanted to tell a love story of a man meeting a woman in a very natural way, simple way. I don't want to say too much about story, but I wanted to see what happens when you live really long, really long time on a place. What happens to you? What does it mean to be very long time on a tropical island? I also was very aware that for many people, a desert island is a bit like paradise. It's advertised like paradise in holiday brochures, and fair enough, because they are wonderful. I've been on one, and they're great. But they are not that great. In the photos, the sky is blue and the beaches are white. The beaches are full of stuff. The sky is not always blue. There are insects, there are other creatures, etc. And it was important not to idealize nature. The story shows a beautiful nature and beautiful islands, but not always. There's danger, and sometimes it's clear that you don't belong there. You want to go home.
You said before that you were thinking about how a man is alone in the nature. And there was this girl at Leaf Festival that asked at the end of the movie, was the guy just like thinking about everything that happened in the movie? He like maybe got crazy when he was alone at the island. Mm. Was he just imagining the whole story?
The story plays with that, because what is reality, what's imagination? There are also dreams. The first dream, there are a few very simple dreams, not like long dreams where lots of things happening, but very simple dreams. But first time you see a dream in the film, you don't know it's a dream, but then suddenly the dreamer wakes up, the man wakes up, and as a spectator you immediately understood, oh okay, now I understand it. What we've just seen was a dream. Now we are back into waking life. And so the film plays with the difference between the dream world and the awake world. But the two are not that separate. I see whole life as a dream, basically. It's on a different level. It's much finer dream. And the film plays with that. So what is reality, really? Different people, different spectators can interpret it in different ways. So it's not a film that says, well, we are playing with reality and you figure it out for yourself. No, we are very careful with that, because otherwise it's very irritating for the spectator not to understand. But the spectator has the freedom to feel at ease with one interpretation, and another spectator can see another interpretation. I can give you an example to be a bit more precise, because it sounds a bit abstract. I made a short film called Father and Daughter, a short animated film. And it's a film about death, or maybe it's not. And once, after screening, two people came to me, and one said, I really liked the way you, the film talks about death, the way you symbolize death in the film. And the other person said, What are you talking about? Film is not at all about death. And they were both right, but both have a different sensitivity towards death. So for one, it's clearly about death, and for the other, it's not. And yet it worked for both people. And we have that very often in music too, and in art in general. We have all got our different sensitivities, so we look at things differently. So I've walked once in a park with a friend, in a very wild park with lots of forests, and he was uncomfortable. He said, "Nature makes me feel uncomfortable. I feel insecure in nature. I'm longing to go back to my flat or to go back to the main street." And I'm a bit of the opposite. I feel nature is who I am and where I belong, although I love to go back to my home. So that's how different we can be, and the film plays with that.
The interpretation is more open because you don't use the human sounds.
Exactly.
Well, there are human sounds, but they are not speaking. I found it funny, since you've also been working for this heavy metal, Metal Orlon, where they had the same problem, as far as I heard, with the woman at the end.
Like, oh, I didn't know that.
The woman, that they couldn't find the appropriate voice for the woman.
That's so interesting.
They just decided she's not going to talk.
Yes, that's interesting. I didn't know that. But I worked on that film in 80, and that's a long time ago. And I was just a beginner animator. It was my first job one of my first jobs after my studies. And I did a small section of animation, so I was not really involved in the filmmaking. The Red Turtle is without dialogue, and that's a conscious choice. In the beginning, I thought it needed some dialogue, but then the dialogue was dropped, and it adds to the purity of the story. The story is very pure, very simple. And as soon as you introduce dialogue, you have to explain things. Sometimes it's good not to explain things, just like in real life. But you have to be very careful, because if it's too much mystery, then again, it's not comfortable for the spectator, and he or she may feel that the film is badly made. So if you don't have dialogue, you need very clear other languages. And the obvious other languages are the acting, the way the characters move, and the facial expressions. And you have to be very, very clear on that. And you have to be clear about music and the sound effects. And you have to be clear about film language in general. It's much more, film language is saying much more than we realize, because we play with unconscious, subconscious messages. So I think the film works because we were very sensitive to how to replace verbal dialogue with other languages. There's something else I have to say, is when you record voices for animated films, it's very sensitive, because a human voice says words, but also says lots of little messages. You can hear someone's age, someone's education, someone's sensitivity, someone's honesty. You can hear lots of little messages in their voice, independently from the words they say. And you can even guess, when you don't see the character, you can guess the shape of their face a little bit. Obviously, if it's a man or a woman or a child, but also if the man has a big jaw or a particular shape of the tongue or the teeth. And for us, it's so normal to listen to that, that we don't even think about it. We are sensitive to those messages in a natural way. Now, when you take a human voice and you put it on a rabbit or a duck or a human being in an animated film, there you really, really play with contradictions. For instance, typically you can have a huge bear, and when he talks with a female voice, because it's supposed to be a female bear. But it's a huge creature with a big chest and big body, and it doesn't sound right. And there I have a problem. So in other words, I find using voices in animation is very, very, very tricky.
Is this your first totally non-human voice animation?
It's not, because in short films, it's very common not to use voices, because you have just one simple message, and you use music and visuals to tell that. And we short filmmakers, we recognize very early that voices are often overrated. You don't need voices. I'm absolutely not saying that it's in a negative way, because many films have a very, very strong dialogue, short or long films, and very, very funny dialogue, or very poetic or whatever. And there the filmmakers were very very talented and conscious. I've done voices in commercials, I've done animated commercials, and I loved playing with voices. But there I very quickly discovered that you have a conflict between what you hear and what you see.
Do you think without the voices, the animation seems much more like a fairy tale? Like, we don't know where exactly it is, we don't know exactly who they are. They aren't like these magical creatures, but it still seems like a fairy tale.
I think you're right. And the visually also, you don't know which century they are and which country they are from. And we played with voices early in the film because at that point I thought it would be important to have voices. And then people would say to me, "Whoa, it's really strange suddenly to hear him talk. And he speaks French," because we were making it in France, but I also had an English version. So, "Oh my God, he's English." So there you feel that, in fact, they were totally happy not to know which nationality he is. And I think it's important. In this story, it's important. In other films, you would immediately say, careful, careful. People need to know what his background is. They need to know his culture because it belongs to the story. In this story, you start with someone arriving alone on a desert island. It's perfect to have complete virgin image of him. All you know is what he does.
Plus, he has friends in these turtles that don't speak also. Why True. Did you choose the turtle? Does it symbolize something to you?
I did some research because I wanted to know, do turtles make noises? And they make breathing noises, but they don't scream or shout or sing or anything. They are reptiles and they are underwater. I'm not saying underwater creatures can't speak. I mean, fish can make noises, but they are very quiet. They make a few noises with the air, but they don't have vocal cords. I chose the turtles because they are amazing creatures. They are peaceful. They are solitary. They are beautiful to watch. They give the impression of being immortal, or at least very ancient. And we like that. As human beings, we like turtles because they are solitary and peaceful. We can identify with them a little bit because they have a head and arms and legs. And they can breathe air, they can go on land. They are closer to the human body than a fish, for instance. And also, purely as a visual artist, I like the idea that when you, for the first time you see a turtle in the film, it's really like, wow, look at that animal. All animals are beautiful, but some animals are in films are more striking because they are visually very striking. It's also very important for me that the turtles are not too cute. And I don't want the film to be too cute, too sweet. If it was a beautiful dog or a pony or, you know, a kangaroo, then it's a furry animal and you can caress it and it has big round eyes, and etc. I like the fact that the turtle has an expression on its face which is a little bit angry and has a beak which could easily snap off your finger, and it has a hard shell around its body.
What about the little cute crabs? They are kind of cute.
Yes, so they are cute animals in the film, but yet they are not that cute. Those crabs, land crabs, they're called ghost crabs because they are white. They live on beaches and they move like spiders. And I mean, they have very fast movements and they have legs like spiders. Mm-hmm. So they're incredibly cute because they have little black eyes, which are little sticks sticking out of their head. And they walk sideways, which is cute. But same time, you don't take a crab in your hand very easily because they are a bit too fast in their movements. I've seen them on beach, and I think, my God, they're so funny. They are naturally funny. They don't have to say funny things or do a little dance or something. They're naturally funny. Let's put them in the film because the film hasn't got a strong humor. Accent on humor. It's not a funny film, but it needs some light moments like that. And crabs are funny because they're stupid. They just want to eat and disappear in their little holes, and they don't care about human beings. They don't care about anything. They just want to eat, and that makes them very, very funny in a film.
So you had quite some of different types of movements. How did you animate? It seems like a classical animation, like you were drawing it maybe by hand also in the beginning, but you probably animated it with computer, or what was actually the technique?
Yeah, now there's a very, very strong tendency. Now there's a strong tradition to do computer animation. Most films are computer animation. It has huge advantages. It's more efficient. You can manipulate things more. Even at the very end, you can change things. You can create more coherence because every animator, an animator who does drawings in his or her personal style. And if you get four animators, they all draw differently. And to make a film that brings those four styles together is not always easy. So you get imbalances in the film. And with computer animations, you can stick to one style. So there are many advantages. Also, it's a technique where you can travel much easier in the landscape. But I chose hand-drawn animation for this film, partly because that's the kind of animator I am and I've always been. But that's not the only reason, because you can be a hand-drawn animator and make a computer animated films. Very easily, many people do that. But I find hand-drawn animation beautiful because actually it's more human. It's slightly imperfect. The drawings are not perfect. Even if you're very good, the drawings always have little imperfections. And that gives a charm. A bit like a live instrument, someone who plays live on a piano, guitar or saxophone. You hear that it's not perfect, it's not clean, it's a slightly little side effects which are slightly off, and that makes it beautiful. So it was a visual choice, also an artistic choice. But having said that, we didn't draw on paper. To prepare the film, I drew on paper. I did the pencil sketches. But when the animation team arrived, when we were all sitting in the same building, sitting literally at our desks animating, instead of drawing with a pencil on paper, we drew with a digital pen on a screen. You literally see the line coming out of the pen on a screen, so it feels the same, but it's a screen. There's no paper involved. And you use a special animation software then immediately to play the sequence of drawings and to see if it works. And it's very efficient, very, very efficient for the animator. It feels a bit unnatural in the beginning because it's not a pencil, but it's very, very close, it's very intuitive. And for me as a film director, it gives me the freedom to ask for changes without having to rub out the drawings or to make new drawings. For instance, typically many animators, when they draw, they lose the sense of proportion, so the hands become too large or the head becomes too small and they don't notice it. And when they've animated 10 seconds and the heads are too small, and you have to ask them, it's very nice, but the heads are too small, you have to redo them. If it's pencil and paper, it's a lot of work to redo all the heads. If it's on a computer, it's much, much quicker to fix and keeping a high quality. So we use a tool called Cintiq to draw the animation. And finally, I have to say that some... And we used Photoshop also for the colors. And finally, I have to say that some animation was done on a computer. The turtles, because they are very hard to animate by hand, because they have a lot of texture on the arms and the legs and on the carapace. And they are just, it's very hard to animate when they move very slowly. When they move fast, it's not a problem, but when they move slowly, it's hard to animate.
So why is it harder to animate slow?
Because
movement?
When something is not very well done, it's easier to see when they move slowly than when they move fast. And a turtle is a very hard shape, solid, very solid shape, but it's not square. Everything is a little bit round, but not perfectly round. So to change the perspective when it moves slowly, it's a very difficult perspective to control. It's just one of those things. There are some other creatures as well. Horses are difficult to animate, and some other creatures are very easy. Crabs are easy, even though they are solid, but the legs move very fast, so they're easy to animate. So those are done in computer animation. I asked the animator, but please make it look like hand-drawn as much as possible, because otherwise the film has two different technical feeling. The film doesn't feel coherent.
Did you ever thought of, since I heard you're also a comic fan, to publish a comic book, storybook after the animation?
Oh, I see. I would love to create a comic book. I would love to. I've done some comics when I was a student, published in student magazines. I wouldn't like to do a comic of the Red Turtle, because now enough is enough. I've been with this film too long. And I've looked at the possibility, because one of the producers is Belgian, and it's a company that, Bellevision Dupuis, it's a company that's famous for comic books. And we talked, is there a comic book in this film? Would it be interesting? And we looked at each other and we said, no, this film is not, it's not kind of film for a comic book. it works better in film language. But my inspiration for this film, I looked at a lot of comic artists. The famous ones, Hergé, who did Tintin, Moebius, Winsor McCay from the United States, and many, many others, Sampé from France. Because I grew up with a lot of comics, I love them a lot.
Well, this half an hour actually went by like a lightning. So I just wanted to ask you, since you seem like a person that really likes to talk about his work, I heard this anecdote that you actually got one time when you got the Oscar Academy Award, that you had so short speech that you even got HD television for having the shortest speech.
Yes. You want me to say something about that?
Yeah.
Because that's the problem with the Oscar ceremony. Problem is that the people who...
Poslušali ste intervju z Mihaelom Dudok-Devitom, z njim se je pogovarjala Pia Nikolić.
Intervju Radija Študent.